I think we have a right to ask ourselves why death is so much the theme of Yom Kippur. Perhaps the most moving of all of the liturgy is the prayer that we're going to be reciting very shortly during the repetition of the Amidah, when the ark is open and we rise for Unasana Tokef. You don't know the words of Unasana Tokef by heart, you may not even recall them at all, but you know the prayer, because it's the one we all sing. Barosh Hashana Yikatevun V'yom Som Kippur Yerichatevun Aviyahon Som Kippur, Aviyahon Som Kippur, Yechateimun. We sing it, we sway, we even have a little bit of a smile on our face because it's so nostalgic. We've heard it for so many, many years. It's the most, one of the most familiar portions of the whole High Holy Days. And yet, when we read what it says, it's frightening. On Rosh Hashanah it is written, and on Yom Kippur our fates are sealed. Who shall live and who shall die? Who shall come to a timely end and whose life shall be cut off before its time? Who shall die by fire and who shall die by drowning? Who shall die by sword? And who shall die by beast? Who shall die from hunger? And who shall die from thirst? Who shall die by earthquake? And who shall die by plague? Who shall die by strangling? And who shall die by stoning? Who will die at ease? And who will die by lingering? On Rosh Hashanah yikatevun. On Rosh Hashanah it's written, and Yom Kippur it is sealed. This prayer was composed by Rabbi Sholem Kananimus of Mainz, who was one of the greatest of all the liturgists for the High Holy Days. He lived in the 11th century. And you know what was going on in the 11th century? The end of the 11th century marked the Crusades. And Jewish communities throughout Europe were destroyed. People met violent deaths at the hands of Crusaders who left their homes and the prisons and the farms of England and France and Italy and Germany to liberate the Holy Land from the infidels, from the Muslims. And along their way, they decimated whole communities, Jewish communities without question. And even as they got further east, Christian communities, whom they didn't believe were Christian because they looked like Muslims. They dressed with turbans. There is a legend connected with Unasana Tokef, and it's a horror story. And this is what we tell on Yom Kippur. I shared it with the people of the San Francisco Towers when the cantor and I went there on Friday evening or Friday afternoon to have a combined Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur service for the people who reside in the towers. It's a story you may have heard before, but it's a story you don't want to hear again. It's a story of tragedy, of sadness, of death. It's a legend of how Rabbi Meshulam ben Kolanimus composed the Unasana Tokef. The legend is that he had a dream, and in that dream, Rabbi Amnon of Mayans taught him the prayer. Who is Rabbi Amnon? It might have been a legendary figure. The name Amnon actually implies emuna or trust. But the story is told that Rabbi Amnon was a great leader in the community in the city of Mainz. He was a nobleman, he was a man of stature, he was handsome, He was wealthy. Alamailas, all the brachas. He lived a good life. And because he was such a prominent person, he had a wonderful relationship with the members of the Christian community, including the archbishop. But every time they would visit with each other, the archbishop would always try to get him to give up his faith in the God of Israel and embrace Christianity. And each and every meeting, there would be discussions and there would be proofs one way or the other, etc. Rabbi Amnon kept feeling badgered until he was able to finally leave the archbishop's home. But one time when the archbishop was pressing him, Rabbi Amnon, just to get him off his back, said, "All right, give me a couple of days to think about it. Not now, not now." And with that, he left. The moment Rabbi Amnon walked out of the bishop's house, he felt drained of all his dignity and self-respect. He felt ashamed and humiliated that he had even allowed to pass through his lips the impression that he would abandon the God of Israel. He went directly to his home and he would not eat or drink. Remember, Yom Kippur. He would not either eat or drink. His family tried to console him. Nothing. When 3 days passed, the archbishop called Rabbi Amnon to come back to his residence with the answer. Rabbi Amnon would not go. He began to send dignitaries, people who knew Rabbi Amnon. He still would not go. Finally, he called upon him to be arrested. And he was dragged to the archbishop's home. And the archbishop was about to pronounce a sentence on him, because political as well as religious leadership was in the hands of one person. Rabbi Amnon said, "No, let me pronounce my sentence. Cut out the tongue that allowed it to speak the words that would make you think I would abandon the God of Israel." And the archbishop said, "No, your tongue spoke truthfully. It is your limbs that did not follow your tongue that shall be punished." And with that, he began to torture and mutilate Rabbi Amnon. Rabbi Amnon was brought home, and it was shortly before Rosh Hashanah. And as he lay dying, he asked that he be brought to the synagogue on the new year. And right before the Chazan was about to chant the Kedusha, Rabbi Amnon asked to interrupt. And he, according to the legend, in a dream to Rabbi Meshulam and Kalanimus, he was the one who composed Berosh Hashanah Yikatevun V'yom Tzom Kippur Yechatevun. It is determined who will live and who will die, who will perish by fire or by water. And this is the hallmark of the Yom Kippur service. We all send out or receive Rosh Hashanah cards with that little picture of a book, maybe inscribed in the Book of Life. But the reason we wish things out to each other is that we're really fearful, because we recognize the possibility, looking at the Yizkor Memorial Boards, we recognize the possibility that our names could be found in none other than the Book of Death. Why is death such a central theme on Yom Kippur? Why of all days do we pick this day for the Yizkor? It began as a custom because of those whose lives were lost in the Crusades. That's when Yizkor was first initiated. And that's why it's found only in the Ashkenazi communities, not in the Sephardic communities. They didn't suffer the Crusades. Not in North Africa and in the Arab countries. It was only those Jews who lived between the British Peninsula, the British Island, and the Holy Land with Jerusalem. And yet, Yom Kippur is the day for Yizkor. Why? And if those are not sufficient to convince you that that's the theme of this day, look at what the cousin and I and Svi Kolinsky and cousin Dreyer, look at what we're wearing. Mine came from a robe manufacturer, I think the Catholics did too, that probably made for church choirs. But that's not where the custom began. We're wearing white because we are emulating shrouds. That's what a kittel is. Look at the one that Svi was wearing. It is similar to the garment that is used to wrap the body of a Jewish person before they are laid to the ground. That's why we wear white on Yom Kippur. Not because we're so clean from sins, but because we want to be reminded of our own deaths. And that we actually begin to feel by not eating and not drinking. Those are the last two things that are given up when a person passes naturally from this world. If you've had the experience, as I have had so many times, to see people die, if it's not been with tubes and machines that they've been attached to, you will see that the natural form of death is when a person loses their appetite, has no interest in drinking, and they cease their input of food and liquid. And that's what enables them to pass out of this world. And then, what do we wear on our feet? Sneakers. We're not playing tennis. We're not going to a basketball game. We are avoiding wearing leather shoes as we do in a shiva home. Many people on Yom Kippur, when they're in the synagogue, remove their shoes completely to be reminded of death. And whom are we sitting shiva for? Ourselves. Why? Is this a morbid religion? No. The Torah tells us, behold, I set before you life and death, of achat b'chayim, choose life, not death. We left the embalming of bodies of the Egyptians. They're the ones with the mummies. We left Egypt. Ours is a religion of life. Why are we so focused on death? Why in Yom Kippur, when we spend the entire day in the synagogue, why such a focus on death? And the answer is, because death teaches us about life. Death teaches us about life. It is only an individual who has confronted their own mortality that begins to truly live. At those stages in life when you still think you're immortal, when you can't imagine ever passing from this earth, you're not yet living life. When you have no fear of your ending, when you see life going on forever, there's always time to take care of it tomorrow. I don't have to worry about today. Today's not significant because there are many, many more todays. There's an endless number of todays. But speak to a person who has been diagnosed with a very challenging illness, or who watched a loved one perish, pass away. Speak to a person who saw the towering figure of a father laid to a grave. Speak to a person who saw the embracing arms of a mother clasped over her chest and her eyes closed forever. And you'll see a person who begins to live life. Look at an individual who lost a child, and you'll see someone who knows how fragile life is and how precious it is. Look at someone who lost an entire family. Survivors can name 50 or 60 people who are no longer with them. It's the facing of death that teaches us the preciousness of life. And what are those lessons? I think they're at least threefold. And that's why we choose Yom Kippur to be focused on death. Because this is the time of the year when we have nothing else to do but to think. And the first lesson I believe that death teaches us about life is what we should really value. What's really important? We all know that famous and somewhat glib, but actually true statement, that there is no one who on their deathbed says, I should have spent more time in the office. No one says that. True. But what we need to do in Yom Kippur is find out what we should be doing if we're not spending more time in the office. What are our values? What do we stand for? What is important to us? What is important to us? And it's not a question that could be answered for everyone. Because we're all individuals, and different things are important to different people. The question is, what is important to you? What are your values? What do you cherish? What are your values means, what do you value? What do you cherish? And you know, when we think about that, we may find that the things we cherish the most, we're reaching for the least. Love. Love. Most people would put love on their list of values that they cherish. And yet, those same people seem to be going through life without love. They don't feel love, and they're not given love. And they would put love as one of the highest values. Relationships. Being connected with someone. That's a value for most people. And yet, we spend our lives, most of us, many of us, some of us, really alone. And I don't mean alone in the apartment or the house. I mean alone in the universe. Not making the connection with another individual or with a community that makes us feel a part of something greater. And I will tell you something. And this is my message to the youngest generation. Cell phones and text messages and IM instant messaging and computers, they take up your time, but they do not connect you. Instead, they fill up your time. They hold you back from real connection. Real connection is not a message. Real connection is something that comes from the heart, a communication to another person that says, I want to be with you. I feel good about myself when I'm with you. You make me feel good being surrounded by you. I love coming here. I love being with all of you. That's connection. And that's not what they get on the text messaging. When you want to think of your values, if you want to figure out what is important to you, not what's important to me. I'm Moshe Levin, I'm entitled to my own values. But if you want to figure out what's important to you, the key to doing that is first to ask yourselves, do I realize what a miracle I am on this planet? Do I realize what an incredible miracle it is that I am, that I be, that I exist? It's a statement I harp on again and again every single year. To realize that the incredible probability of our being in existence is zero, and yet we're still here. That we have eyes to see beauty. that we have ears to hear voices, that we have bodies to move around, that we're not like Rabbi Mayans who's been tortured to death. But even if it's with a cane or a walker, we have places to go. We have things to see. We have things to do. That's a miracle. It's an incredible miracle. If you see your life as a miracle, you will begin to find your values. You'll know what you cherish. Creativity. Making something never existed before. Writing a poem, painting a picture. Making someone happy. Doing some good. Those are our values. The second lesson that death teaches us about life is that we don't have time to do it all. That no matter how long we live, and we have people, Kanai Nahara, in our congregation who have passed the age of 100. And I want to tell you, at least for most of us, we don't have time to do it all. So choose your priorities. Choose your priorities. Decide what you're going to do now. Decide what you're going to do first. Don't wait. When that shofar blows tonight at Neila, get moving. Get moving. Get moving. Because one Yom Kippur, somebody will be saying Yiskra for you. And me. That's the way of the earth. Live in the present, in the moment. Do what you want to do now. Do what's important to you now. Benson Cooper is here. He's saying Kaddish for his sister, Joanna Cooper. Young woman. Young woman. And yet, I've never heard as many tributes about an older person, I think, as much as I've heard about this young woman. Did you ever hear it said about young people sometimes, young people have died, that they live the full life in the short years they had? Let's not be people who live a long life and don't accomplish what it is that we believe is important. Do it now. Don't wait. You want to tell somebody a story? Raya, you want to make sure that the grandchildren and great-grandchildren know who you were and what you went through? Write it down now. Get that video camera. Record it now. Do what you want to do now. Don't wait. Don't wait. And then, third lesson I want to share with you today. Lesson of how to leave a legacy. Jerry was right that I love stories. I really love stories. But if anybody has a story at any time, call me up. It's one of my high values. I'll stop what I'm doing and I'll do it now. I want to listen to your story. I don't know when it actually began, I don't know when it's going to end, but this week they're giving out Nobel Prizes. Two Japanese and one American got Nobel Prize for physics. I think chemistry was awarded yesterday or today. I don't know what's coming up tomorrow. The Nobel Prizes for literature, for science, discoveries, etc. Most people don't know much about Alfred Nobel. He was the one who invented dynamite, the source of tremendous destruction. And it wasn't probably his intention, but that's what it was used for, particularly in World War I. And one day, Alfred Nobel's brother died. And the editor of the newspaper, seeing the death of Nobel, made a mistake and thought it was not the brother, but it was Alfred. And in the newspaper, they wrote an obituary. The inventor of death has met his own death. And the life of Alfred Nobel was written in the newspaper, and he was sitting in a restaurant, turning the pages, and he read his own obituary. And he realized what he's going to be remembered for is having created dynamite, bringing destruction and death to so many people. And right then and there, he got up and he said, I want to be remembered for good, not for evil. And so, he dedicated his fortune to encouraging people to come up with ways of making the world a better place. Of finding cures for disease, of uncovering the mysteries of the universe, of bringing beauty to people's lives, and they would be rewarded appropriately. And today, when you hear the name Nobel, you don't think of dynamite. You think of prizes for things that are good, that make the world a better place. He's an individual who is spurred on really salvation for ultimately millions of people with the discoveries that he encouraged and rewarded long after his own real death. So I think the last lesson of Yizkor, the last lesson of Yom Kippur, and this whole focus on death is to force us to ask ourselves, what do I want to be written and said about me? What do I want to be remembered for? What do I want to be remembered for? I hope I know who's going to remember me. I want all my children to outlive me and many, many, many years after that. But what do I want them to say about me? What do I want my friends to say about me? What do I want my congregation to say about me? What do I want the people whom I've touched and interacted with for all my life, what do I want them to say about me? And it's not a matter of pride. It's not a matter of a concern about the judgments of other people. No. It's the judgment I'm making about myself. What do I want to be remembered for? What do I want said when Yizkor is for me? Rav Huna, the great sage, was quoted in the Mishnah, in Pirkei Avot, and the Mishnah said, do teshuvah, repent from your evil ways the day before you die. They asked him, how does anybody know when it's the day before their death? He said, then live today as if it was your last day. Now we have to start living our life so that we're writing our own obituaries with good things, with things that we're proud of, with things that we've accomplished, with ways we better the world. And my friends, the truth is that all three lessons are one. Just like the white kippel and the non-leather shoes, just like the fasting and the not drinking, just like the Yizkor, the memorial prayers, it's all one lesson. So let your values, do them now, and you'll be remembered for good. It's all one lesson. And we have about 6 more hours to come up with the answer. When that shofar blows, you will be asked, Ayeka, where are you? Where are you?